All right. So I want to pick up with something that we started last week and just to go down another avenue. And that is that when God created the world, which is ongoing, on purpose, by design, God made a world that imploded. And somehow, because of that, through that, with the broken pieces, God created the world that we live in. The initial world is called the world of chaos, and this is called the world of rectification, or the fixed world, work in progress, the world that's fixable. Why did that world implode? What malfunctioned? That's a very big question to ask. The right way. The wrong way to ask the question is to make this into an exercise about speaking about God, which has no bearings on me. So I'm, if at all, I'm curious why. These are not stam words. It's important to understand why God's initial universe imploded, because we are godlike, which means that the lives that we build by design are going to implode. And from it, we will build a new life. That's everyone's story. That's the story of man. Adam and Chava had a life, and it imploded, and then they made a new life. And this is the way it's meant to be. So understanding this is very significant. I don't believe that this happens once. On a small level, it can be happening the whole time. You start a day, your whole day collapses, and somehow, ideally, from the brokenness, you create something new. The non-ideal way is you just avoid it. Okay, it didn't work out. Let me just move on to something else. So these ideas are very relevant, that when something breaks down, there is a wisdom in that. It's part of a design, not my design. And something in that is needed for that which will succeed, if we know how to do that. Understanding why it broke down is important to know what not to do for it not to break down again. So what we didn't learn last week are words. Again, words, I'm saying words because halavai to have this experience. At least we have the words that all creation is made out of the putting together of two opposites. Let's speak about lofty words, God and the world, light and vessels, two opposites, spiritual and physical, the world that we know. We don't know pure spirituality. We might think we know, we don't know. We're physical people. So everything that we know is a mixture between something very tangible and between the meaning in the tangible, the ruach, the spirit of the tangible. Spirit, spirituality, materiality are opposites. In other words, what we know, all of what we know, are opposite forces coming together. How would that work? Why should it work? How can opposites ever get together? If something is just a little bit off between two people, you already don't have people getting together. Forget about opposites. Even if it's not opposites. You're in the mood of this, I'm in the mood of that. If finished, that's it. There's a disconnect. What ingredient, one word ingredient, is needed for opposites to be able to get together? What would that word be? So the word will be bittul. Bittul would mean humility. And most people understand bittul as one side will compromise to the other. Or like in the ideal model, each side will compromise a bit. But there has to be one giving in. Okay? That makes sense? That makes sense. And I'm going to suggest today, to the best of my ability, that if the model of Bittul is compromise, that world will collapse. I'm not against compromise, chas v'shalom. I'm speaking about a concept, and then everyone should figure out how to bring that concept in. If there won't be compromise, then how do you put the opposites together? Anyone? You have two opposite people or two opposite things, and you're trying to bring them together. If one side or both sides don't exercise tzimtzuming themselves, allowing space for the other, compromising, which is allowing space for the other, then how could they, if they could? Is there another way? What would be the other way? That's the question. I want to read a Hayom Yom. Today's Hayom Yom. Today we're learning Monday. Today is the 10th of Iyar. Today is the 25th of the Omer. And very, very powerful, short words that are very deep. Some of today's Hayom Yom is where the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, the Rebbe is saying that the word for counting of the Omer in Hebrew is Usfartem, Sfira, and the word Lispar, to count, doesn't only mean to count. The word also can be used as to shine. Safir, a sapphire. Sapphire, which is the real diamond that the beers replaced. It's fake news. A shining stone is sapphire. The Ten Commandments were engraved in sapphire. And the sapphire, I'm not going into the color of it, also represents a shining, a brilliant stone. Brilliance. So make you into something brilliant. What would that mean? Shine. Be a person who shines. Usfartem lachem. That the lachem should be shining. How do you do that? He says, you do that through the counting of the Omer. What are we doing when we're counting of the Omer? So we have seven emotional attributes. And when we count the Omer, we don't count seven. We count 49. How do you come to 49? Because each one of the seven is broken down into seven subsections. And one is integrated in the other. Chesed shebegevura. Gevura shebechesed. Through that avoida, you become a shining person. So, how do you do that? What exactly are we doing? What would it mean to you to integrate opposite emotional attributes? I'm asking a question. How would you word it? Well, you have to integrate. How would you do that? First, can you use an example? Can I find an example of two parts in the person that are in opposition? What would that be? Yetzer hara, yetzer tov. Very good. In other words, we have within us opposing forces, mamash, opposing instincts. It's an instinct. There is an instinct to be kind. There is an instinct to be let's say cruel to the extreme. We all have it. We don't like to see it, so we don't know it, but it's there. And so on and so forth. So what would integration mean? What exactly are you integrating? You're integrating the Yetzer Hara? Are we integrating the Yetzer Hara? Are we looking to do that? So we're not looking to integrate it. What are we looking to do with that? We're looking to resist from it. You want to resist from it. Listen to these words and tell me if what I'm saying is not something that for you is true. Resisting something contaminates you on a deep level just as much as actually engaging in it. If you have to resist something, you know what it means? It's already in you. Externally, what I'm saying now makes absolutely no sense, nor should it. So just as an example, we spoke about kindness and cruelty. So someone comes to me, someone whom I can help, but I have to make a little bit of effort. And with that, I'll be kind and I'll be helping. Okay. Cruelty would be not to help. Why should I help? I'll be cruel, even though I could. So what should a person do? They should help. That's the mitzvah. There's a part in me that's lazy, that's cruel. Resist that. Right? Hiskafya it. Subdue it. Okay, I have in me cruelty, but I'm not going to allow cruelty to be me. I'm going to choose to go with, but I'm resisting it. Even if I succeed always in resisting it, even if the fact that I have to struggle with it, the fact that there is resistance, what does that mean? It means that it got me already. So I'm going to use my words. If cruelty already got me, sooner or later, I'll be cruel. I'm already contaminated with cruelty by the fact that I'm resisting it. If you have to resist something, it sounds good, sure. And yeah, of course, the life that we know of is filled with giving into one, resisting the other. Hopefully, giving into the good, resisting the bad, however it manifests. Every day, a billion times. Two opposites in me are going to be schlepping me, do this, do that. I'm going to think, I'm going to come to my understanding of what's the right thing, what's the wrong thing, or however else. Lofty, right and wrong, not lofty, not whatever, however you function, and you're going to do one and you won't do the other. But if there's resistance towards the other, the fact that you are resisting means you're there. If we see our children struggling not to be cruel, we gotta deal with it. Even if they're not cruel. Why? The very fact that they're resisting, resistance means that I'm already contaminated. It's like when two people are wrestling one with the other. The Alter Rebbe gives an example. When you wrestle with someone who's dirty, you'll become dirty, even if you win the wrestling match. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that we should never resist? God forbid. If we're never going to resist, then we're going to do bad. It's even worse. So what is the other way? Doing bad is not good. Resisting bad is not ideal. Better than doing bad, but if I have to resist it, if I'm fighting with myself. Okay, so what's the way out?
Channeling grace or
what? Huh?
Acknowledge and embrace.
Embrace what? My cruelty? And then what happens?
Embrace that you have that part of you. It's in you. That's, you have to know that this is part of you.
Okay, and now what? And should I resist it or not resist it?
You should not resist it. You should just process it and deal with it.
If I won't resist currently that bad in me, I will end up doing it. I promise you. Even when I resist, I don't always succeed.
Channel it. Like that mashal the shochet, right? Like someone wants to kill, they should
replace it with something else. I'm just looking at the practice.
Okay.
You have that piece of bread that you cannot eat because it's going to be bad for you. It's in front of you. You substitute it with something else. So you just... simplifying it.
Okay. First of all these things in the real world are very, very helpful. My challenge against it is not debating what you're saying. I fully agree with everything you're saying, but let's go into that. If I have a problem with bread, let's say bread is not good for me, but I want to eat bread, this mushroom. So it's easy for me, cop out is better than eating bread. Is don't put the freaking bread on the table. Don't have it there. Put something else that I like, and you'll distract me. It's like a kid is looking to do something bad, and you distract them because the kid is, just a kid, and the kid is happy. But that's not ideal, because then I have an issue with bread. I did not learn how to deal with bread. My practical solution, which is a lot better than not, is don't put the bread on the table. Find something that I equally like. This guy is a murderer, your example. This guy has a murderous tendency. He likes to draw, God forbid. Okay, so give him a behemoth. Let him shech the behemoth. It's good and bad. Why is it bad? What's the problem with it? Why is this not the ideal?
It's still there.
Because if tomorrow the animal won't be in front of me, the person will be in front of me, I'm back square one. Now, the only thing is that when the person is in front of me, hopefully I'll resist. I'm laughing. That's already a bet. If I'm laughing, that means I have it in me. I'll own that. If I'm laughing because I find it funny, I'll have to resist and not kill him. Better than killing, of course. But the fact that I have to resist killing, oi gewalt, like the emphasis is to cry, not to laugh. That means that I have in me a relationship with killing. Chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom won't take it away. I can say, if I have it, I have it. And I don't want to have it. But what do I do?
Is it that you have to see the source of what it is that you really want. You don't want to kill. You want something else that comes from the act of killing. Like, you don't want the bread. You're trying to fill something else.
So let me say something. Maybe you heard it from me before, but people don't remember it to repeat it, mm-hmm. myself included. The moment a person asks, what do I do? They are on the wrong track. It's not something that we do or not do. I understand the world of toyu, the world of doers. Doing it, I'm doing it like this, I'm doing it like that. I think when people are the doers, there's going to be a breakdown. That in itself will lead to a breakdown. The world of tikkun is a world in which people don't do. They see with their wise eyes really open how much split we have within ourselves. I don't think people are able to see that properly. It's too scary. It's scary because we don't know what to do because there's nothing we can do about it. And to suffer the split, to see how much do I have within me opposition, inner opposition. Many people are uncomfortable in settings in which there is opposition. If you're in a setting where everyone is against you, are you going to be comfortable there? No, you won't. I think we have to know that that is happening right now if you are all alone, secluded. There is many parts of us, like the seven midas, divided by seven. There's a whole inner confrontation that's happening the whole time between different parts within me that each one is pulling in a different place or sometimes in an opposite place. Compromise, again, I'm suggesting, comes from the world of toyu. Down to earth, it's the easiest way to go. And in many cases, it works for a while. Maybe sometimes it works forever, maybe. But it doesn't resolve the problem. Because if I compromise, then a part of me is in opposition to what I'm doing. If I would have it my way, I would do it one way. Now, if you would have it your way, it would be mamish the opposite. So we're coming to a compromise. But that's not a real solution. That's a practical solution. I can tell you, I have seen this on a very practical level when two people are having a financial dispute and they're sitting in front of a Beis Din. You know what makes the compromise of the Beis Din succeed? I have seen this again and again. What meaning? When is it that both parties will agree to the proposed compromise? I'm going to say something very, doesn't reflect nice on human beings, but that's the way we are, is that Reuven and Shimon, me and you, if they're asking me to compromise, I'll give in when I see that the other side needed to compromise the same way. If I'm going to think that other person is getting more than me, I'll never compromise. That's how tainted compromise is.
Me too, 50%.
Has to be 50%. If I'm hurting, you're hurting. If I don't see that you're hurting, I'll never accept the compromise. I'm not talking about never. I hope at times I won't be that way, but I see that in me. And I have seen this in many, 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 many people. So what would be a better solution, the ideal solution? An ideal solution cannot come from man. The ideal solution would be when both parties actually see how much opposition they have. You go all the way to the breakdown. It broke. It doesn't work. We are against each other. And there is nothing we can do about it. Nothing. It's a whole different type of bittul. This is not a compromise bittul. I'm not being bittul to you. I'm being humbled by realizing that I am in a dilemma that has no way out. There is no way out. That's a whole different type of bittul. And that invites God in a real way, into my life, that some third way will appear from God, which will mamish get each party all of what they need. And I don't know what that's going to be. In every case will be different. I know people that had that experience. I understand the idea, but this is something not to be understood. This is something to be experienced. And the way we get there is by not being the one to fix it, by not doing anything, by mamish letting it be, the opposite, seeing how much opposition there is. Perhaps that's the meaning of the Hayom Yom, that the Tzemach Tzedek is saying that when you try to include one attribute in the other, which means opposite attributes, what will happen to the person is that they're going to come to a checkmate. They're going to come to a place where they themselves implode. You know, the people that begin to question their very identity. You can see it's very scary. Like, who am I? Yeah. Don't come with the answer. The answer is not something that you can come with. The answer might come to you. And if the answer comes to you, that's going to be the world of rectification. That's going to be the world of tikkun. It's a whole different avoid. I even think that people go through this, they're just not aware of it. That people go through life that they're very good in doing and fixing and compromising and working things out. And what does God do? God brings every person to a place where you can't work it out. Won't work. It stops working. And then what? And then the person says, this is not something that I can do. I think that's a portal to the world of tikkun. And prior to getting there, you'll never have the solution coming from above, because God basically tells us, if you have the solution, there's no hate. You don't need God to do what you're doing. You don't need God. You're doing what you're doing. And most people on a deep level don't give it to God. They can't. It's scary. It's scary to mamash give it up. I'm going to say the same, what I'm saying right now, I'll tell you the words in Hebrew. That in the world of Toyu, the bittul came from the light. In the world of Tikkun, the bittul comes from the keli. Simply meaning that in the world of Toyu, of course there was a bittul. How does light and vessel come together? How does God and world come together? Bittul from the light would mean, imagine you're standing in front of a person who's the biggest, wisest person. Big chacham. So you listen to the big professor. You're buttle to them. But why are you buttle to them? Because you see their brilliance. That's when you give in, because you acknowledge that the other is greater. That's not an ideal bittle. That's not an everlasting bittle. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because one day you might be just as smart as they are, or they might say something foolish. And then you won't be bittul to them, nor should you. Bittul from the keli means that you see how you have no solution. And there's nothing I can do. I have to see that. That is the breakdown, I think, of Toyu. The realization of creation that we don't have the solution. Many people see that as a problem. I'm trying to say that this is mamash the problem is the solution. It was a problem that has a solution to something that we are willing to take on. I'll work harder and I'll make it work. I can handle. It's not easy. I can do it. But don't give me something that I can't handle. God, why you give me something I can't handle? Everyone is going to ask that question. And the answer is because we are meant to come to a place in which we experience that what we are doing here is not ours. It's God's. It's not mine. And for that to happen, I have to be buttled to God. Not buttled to God because God is great. No, buttled to God because I know that I can't. Whether God is great or not, I cannot do that. And where do you have that feeling? When the opposition is inside of you. Any problem that's external, we know the way out. Any problem, that's the whole world that we're running away. Everyone is running away. Why are we running away? Because we erroneously link the problem to something outside of us. And therefore, it makes it solvable. We do that because it's solvable. So if there's something horrible that I'm feeling, the easiest thing for me to say is, yeah, of course, look at my setting. I don't like my house. I don't like my country. I don't like my income. I don't like my workplace. I don't like something, which you might not. Put it on there. And then you know the solution already. Solution is leave. Person says, oh, my spouse, it's the best cop-out. Why? Because it's not just a cop-out, because that gives the person the feeling of control that I have a solution. My problem in my life is the other. Okay, leave. And even if I won't leave, I feel good about me because I know that there is a way out. The falsehood in that is that all problems with the other is that you're having a problem with yourself. And you have no place to go to. You cannot run away from yourself. And people are afraid to see that in them because they don't want to face a problem that they have no solution to. And the real bittul can only be born when you face a problem that you have no solution to, when you finally experience, there is nothing I can do. It's not something for me to do. Me doing it all is me becoming God. And many people have that. I can say that in the Fruma world that we live in, thank God, many people have that attitude. They think like God and me are buddies. Like if I'll be religious, everything will be resolved. God is going to bless me if I'm Frum. Because I'm on God's side. You align with God, which is so disrespectful. We are not aligned with God. God is God and we are we. We are in service of God. We try to connect to God. We have a piece of God in us, but we're not God. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, because many people here, I think, always came from a Fruma world, but there's a certain potential arrogance that we might have because we feel too aligned with the divine. You understand what I'm saying? And we're not. We're lucky that we're Frum. But God does what God wants. Look at Moshe Rabbeinu. Did Moshe Rabbeinu enter the Holy Land? No, he did not. Who can understand that? No one. It's not meant for us to understand. But no matter how close he became, how godly he became, it was clear that God is the boss. That he did not get his way. Knowing that we will not get our way. We will not get our way is the beginning of the world of Tikkun. Me getting my, through a compromise, at least I'll get some of that attitude, is the breakdown. That breaks down because at some point we realize, I will not get my way. I don't have a solution. It's unsolvable. And where do I go from there? I go nowhere. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not replacing it. I'm not channeling it. I'm stopping with all of that, even though those things are very good, especially for younger people, especially in the external world. We need those techniques. If not, we'll all get into trouble. I'm not advocating getting into trouble. Chas v'shalom. We have to do the right thing. But doing the right thing doesn't always mean you're going to be in peace within yourself. Doing the right thing for most people will mean that you're going to be resisting a part of yourself the whole time. And instead of thinking, wow, how great am I? I'm constantly resisting my urge. The whole Yom Kippur I didn't eat, right? I resisted, I didn't do it. Amazing. Yes, amazing if the options are eating or not eating. Amazing that I didn't eat. But how tragic is it that on the holiest day of the year, I was spending time and energy eating food by not eating food, dealing with food. You know, there's a Hasidish question. It's not meant to be answered. That how can it be that on Yom Kippur, we're spending all this time speaking about sins? Even though we are remorseful. But still, it could be viewed as you're spending the whole day doing what? Immersed in sin. Imagine if you would take a day, don't think about sin. Just do good. Just go ahead and do tzedakah. Wouldn't that be a loftier day? It would be a loftier day if we would be in Malach. Thing is, we're not a Malach. We have resistance to sin because we have a desire for, we have a tendency for. So it's in me anyways. At least on Yom Kippur, I'm being honest. Some of the day I'm speaking about what's going on in the heavens, beautiful. Some of the days I'm singing nigunim, beautiful. And some of the days I'm admitting, at best, that I'm remorseful that I sinned. And I'm contending with lowly behavior. I'm not doing that to bring myself down. I'm doing that because I'm already down. I'm not bringing myself, I'm just not denying that part of me. The godly in me doesn't have to, my neshama is not doing vidui. Doesn't need to do it. We say vidui before we die. The neshama has nothing to do with this. It's not resisting it. It's not tempted by it. It's irrelevant. It doesn't notice it. It could even be that certain tzaddikim didn't notice certain behaviors. It could be. Great tzaddikim. It's not in their universe. I know that Elisha ben Avuya, I heard this from Rabbi Tauber, he quoted a chazal. Someone was wondering how certain people in Crown Heights under the Rebbe's nose, now we know they were mamish molesters. Like, why didn't the Rebbe stop them? He sees what we don't. I remember he said that the question is not on him, the question is by all the great Nevi'im. One of the greatest Nevi'im that we had, the student of Eliyahu HaNavi, his gabbai was a molester. So how did that happen? He didn't know. He's a big Navi. Yeah. Because he doesn't contend with this. He doesn't have, it's so foreign to what could be that he can't see it. That was a good insight, whether you'll accept it or not.
Argue that if you see it in yourself, so you can identify it in someone else, it's a good thing?
Let me go in the opposite direction. If I can identify something in someone else, the most important thing in my life will be when I finally am able to say, to see, that not maybe not in the crudest of forms. I'm not talking about the behavior. But if I'm seeing it in you, that's only because I have it in me. The physical sees the physical. We don't see spirit. Why don't I see spirit? Because my eye is a piece of flesh. There has to be a certain relationship in the worlds of Shaduchim. Shayach, ever heard that? Not Shayach. Ever heard that liner? You'll get whoever's doing Shaduchim in the Haredi world. Someone has proposed and the answer is not Shayach. Not Shayach means we're not of the same universe. Nothing personal. Because we're crazy. We're great and you're crazy. That's what they're saying. Because we're great people and you guys are losers. So it's not Shayach. Shayach. Physical. Yeah, if I see something in the other, you have all of these stories from the Rebbes, from our Rebbes, how people would comment to them and they would begin to speak about certain desires or behaviors that were really outside of any type of boundary. And sometimes there's a story, I think, with the Mittel Rebbe, that he told that person to leave his room. He locked the door and he was secluded for hours. And when his Gabbai went to check up on him, he was like Yom Kippur. He was crying and he was this. And what is that all about? So the Rebbe said that if someone is presenting a problem to me, the fact that it came to me must mean that there's something in me that has that.
So if you see someone creepy,
he was looking.
If you see someone creepy,
that means that not you. I'm not. That,
no,
if I see someone creepy, that means I'm creepy.
Creepy.
Yes.
I have something creepy in me, but
if not, you wouldn't notice it.
But I would rather have that creepiness in me under control to be able to identify it in someone else in order to remain safe than to not have it and not identify it.
Thank you. Very good. Because if you're not going to see it in you, then it's going to get the better of you without you even knowing it. 100%.
Or could it be that you won't even cross anyone creepy if you don't have creepy in you?
I think you would in this world, but you wouldn't notice it.
But it would notice you?
No. You wouldn't see each other.
So if anybody ever comes across a creepy person, it means that they have creepiness.
On the level that we're talking, absolutely yes. On the level that we're talking. Don't, if this is misunderstood the wrong way, then I don't put that on me.
No. Yeah, I'm just trying to understand it. So yeah. Let's say I see a creepy person, and I know that I have creepiness in me because I've now seen it and identified it. I'm like, kids, this person's creepy. Be careful. And they're like, how do you know? I'm like, because I have it in me, and I know.
Don't say that to your children because they'll misunderstand that.
I'm just kidding.
Not because...
Just kidding.
I think it's good to be honest with our
kids. Guys, this guy's creepy. Cross the street.
Yes.
That means something in me identifies with that.
Yes.
And so I have that within me.
That was your opportunity to see something in you.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do with... What do you do? You just...
That's what I'm asking. What do I... Nothing. Don't
you
do...
Don't do anything.
If you... Actually, it's going to break you down. I don't want to talk to you personally.
Okay,
let me go to me. It means if I see a flaw...
Yeah.
If I were to finally see that in me... not only is there nothing that I can do, but it would undo me. I would be broken to my core of having something like that as part of me, that there's nothing I can do about that. That is the breakdown of Toyum. And that invites in something that is not of my doing, that integrates. In other words, what I'm suggesting is that integration on a deep level is never something that we do. If I'm doing it, it's not done. It will be undone. It's going to be broken. Toyu. Integration is only within the koyach of the divine. Only God can integrate opposites. Only God can resolve the impossible problem, not man or woman. So why wouldn't God resolve it for all of us? Because very few people experience, I cannot do anything. They actually constantly experience, I know there's a solution, and I'm a smart person, and I'll figure it out, and I always figured it out. Or even to cloak that with these holy words, God will for sure help me. But when they're saying God will for sure help me, there's that expectation that since I'm doing the right thing, God better help me because he will, because me and God...
To take that thing out of
you? Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily...
What God does is God's doing, and there's no way you can package it, and it's done to everyone on a different level.
It doesn't really matter if you have that in you. Like, if you're watching a movie about a murder.
Yes.
A crazy murder.
Yes.
And you see that they're crazy. That means you have crazy murder somewhere.
That's what the Baal Shem Tov says. Okay. Yeah.
So you identify with it.
Don't put things in you that you don't have. First, you have to be careful.
But you do, because you see it in your life.
But you have to know where it is. You have to see what is. Not just that you can't take an idea. Or since I heard this idea, which is true.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's in me. And I saw on a movie someone murdering the other. It means I'm a murderer. Don't put that in you because you are not. You have to actually. You have to find the root of whatever you watched in you in a real way. You have to actually see it. It's not so easy to see it. It stays hidden. But what you will see externally will look nothing like what you saw. That for sure.
If you identify with that and then you...
Not identify. You find it within you.
You find it
how it really is.
And you're actually disgusted by it.
More than it's going to break you down. It's going to be much more. The word disgust is not a good word.
Like, okay, it breaks you down. So then is it then, can you say, oh, it's a good thing. Hashem put it in me and it's there and it's part of me. Is that the point? Is that the bottom line? Not to be...
You have to be careful where to draw God in, because again, when you say that it's good that God put it in me, it almost sounds like there'll be a time where someone will have to stand up and kill the intruder. So thank God that God put it in me. That's all me doing. That's me channeling. It's in there for me to use it for a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not it. That's missing the mark. This is a deep thing. The real mark is when a person finally sees, I see it. I'm not putting it in me. I'm seeing how it is in me. I'm seeing my opposition. I want to go back to the Pesach program for a moment. I can't get over, you see? The fact that I'm resisting the Pesach program is araya, that I'm tainted with the Pesach programs, worse than you. The fact that I resist Florida means that there's something with me in Florida that, oh my God, that means if I end up moving to Florida, you can say you knew it. See, you resist. Resisting means you're tainted. God forbid. But you never know. But people went away, they were trying to get away from something. And I want to suggest that whatever you were trying to get away from, if you were only to be honest, don't listen to my words, but see where it fits. Exactly what you were looking to get away from, bidiyuk, happened over there. Has to be that way. I'm not talking about the
going there for something.
I'm not talking about the going. I'm talking about the getting away from.
Well, no, maybe no one's trying to get away.
I know that. I didn't. If one had in it a component of I need to get away,
right.
Whenever a person feels.
Yeah. What does it have to be something that you're running away from?
Yeah.
Or something that you want to have there?
Why can't what you have there be here?
Oh, because.
Okay, one second. I want to hear the answer from you. Because
sometimes that, like, physically doesn't, like, it's hard. Like,
physical externally is very important.
Like,
in the inner world.
You have that
opportunity to have like bigger house, bigger place.
Even bigger. The real truth,
Include everybody.
All of that can be had where you're at as a rule with very, very, very few exceptions. Externally, no. Bipnimius, in deep, yes. Now, if I'm going there for something there, even I'll go with that. I'm not talking about that part. I'm talking about of when a person feels that what's here, I cannot bear. And therefore, I'll go there because there, things will be better. Mm-hmm. It has to be, not externally, that bipnimius, what played itself out over here that I'm putting on the outside, that I'm projecting on the outside, is all an inner conflict. All of my problems in my life on this level is part of me fighting with another part of me that I can't even see. So how do I see it? I'm fighting with you. And if I'm not even developed to see that, that means I have to be completely sanitized, then I'll see two people fighting. That will be the most superficial. I'm seeing you fighting with you. And how convenient, right? Then I can just walk away. And even if I'm fighting with you, how convenient I can walk away from you. And even if I never will, I can live with the delusion. I know it's a problem. I'm choosing to stay with you, but I can walk away from you. Which is not true, because my problem with you is a problem with me. And I cannot walk away from me. And God in his wisdom, if we are only a little bit humble, and sometimes it takes 20, 30, 40, 50 years, but at some point, we realize that not in the brain. The mind can understand these words. You can accept it. You can just debate with it. I think people have to experience that. That what they thought was a dilemma outside of them, any dilemma, all of our dilemmas, is a dilemma between one part of me and another part of me. And I could make a compromise, but it's not going to really solve the problem. It's going to manage the problem. And I'm still going to have to exercise discipline, even in the compromise, because I'm agreeing to do something that I don't want to do. So I'll have to discipline myself. In the long run, that system is meant to break down. It's needed. Many times, this is the right way. This might be the right way in many, many scenarios. But in life, in the long run, the ultimate is for everyone to come to where I got it. It's me. It's in me. And I have to put together the seven. These are still, you have to, how do you refine the seven? How do I refine myself? He's saying to incorporate the seven in the seven. What does it mean to incorporate? Before you incorporate, you have to see the parts. You'll see the parts. You'll see some of my parts cannot be incorporated. Cannot. Kindness and cruelty cannot be incorporated. You're kind or you're cruel. What do you mean incorporate? Or compromise. Be cruel a little bit. We don't want to be cruel at all. How can you compromise? You can't. But I have cruelty.
I'm very confused. I don't know what the solution is. So you can't compromise.
I'm very happy asking.
You can't go full all in. What are we, so?
I'm happy. I'm happy. I'm good, good, good. So listen to something that you never thought of. But don't just understand it. Hopefully it should go in. You are wired good. We are all wired that we are meant to solve our problems. I want you to know that there are certain problems that not only do you not solve, but only when you finally realize that you cannot ever solve it, okay, and therefore you have this frustration, okay, times 10, yeah, will you be worthy of having a breakdown? And in the breakdown, God will come and do something that you cannot even dream of what that would be. Custom made for you, that's going to somehow integrate your dilemma.
How does one get to this breakdown?
Yeah. I want to break down. I break down every day.
Good, so you're on the right path.
Yeah. It's a different breakdown. I don't know.
I think we all have mini breakdowns. And most people, instead of going deeper in their breakdown, they get scared of it. And they right away either distract themselves. They distract themselves. Or they right away go back to what you just said. once I said so many times, it's not something that you can do, and you are a smart person, you heard it from me in this class maybe five times, and 5 minutes later you forgot what I said. That's how foreign this is. Not in your mind, in our bones. What do you mean? What do you mean I don't do? No. My whole life was, and in the world that you live in, if you're not going to be the one that's doer, you're going to get into trouble. Your attitude is good, not bad. Depends where. When it comes to the avoid of integrating your seven emotions, these words that we learn in Hasidus, that attitude is the problem, not the solution.
So you have to hit the rock bottom in certain aspects of
we
your
life. We all
have
to hit rock bottom, and not that now I know what to do. I'm doing it now. I'm going to do rock bottom, and then I'll do it. Exactly. That will ruin it. No.
How do you not make yourself hit rock bottom? It's like it sounds weird. Okay, so my rock bottom is if I finish the whole bottle or half of the bottle. No,
I'm not even, first of all, you don't make yourself anything. Okay. Stop doing. It's about seeing. Let's just seeing.
It's spiritually a rock bottom.
It's seeing, but it's a rock bottom through seeing. What am I looking to see? I'm looking to see how in me there is a conflict that in which I'm trapped.
Okay,
1 second.
You're trapped and you don't know what to do and you say, don't do.
You don't even have to say don't do. There's nothing you can do. If a person, chas v'shalom, is locked in a cell of 2x2, they can't even lay down. They don't have to tell themselves, don't do anything. No. There's nothing they can do.
But that sounds horrible.
Yes.
That sounds like the hostages.
Yes.
You like got yourself physically and spiritually into the most give over to Hashem. But like that's in our times today with our limited physical minds is nearly impossible. That's the problem we have today. Because we can't easily unless we become a hostage.
We are all there, but we choose to be blind not to see what is.
Everybody has areas where they're hostages.
Thank you.
But like...
And what they do is that first they think they can do. They think that they can solve it, even though I won't. But I know what the solution is. Just that gives them a false power, empowerment that doesn't help them. If it's a problem with the other, then the solution is to leave the other.
May I present like an example? For instance, let's say for someone that's looking for shit out and they're doing everything right and contacting everybody.
Very good.
There's nothing you haven't done.
Thank you.
Any avenue you haven't explored. Then you say, you know what, Hashem? I give up.
I have seen people go, that's a great example. Because if there's even one website that I didn't go to yet, even though I don't plan to go there, I still feel in somewhere deep, there's still something I can do. It's only when every avenue known to man was done, which takes a while, and yet the problem is there. Rubashkin said it so good. He said that after 8 years being in jail, after trying every single type of appeal, can you imagine on the last day of Hanukkah, he was notified that the final thing that exists in the universe for him to have, the final thing was rejected. And he already knew before that if this gets rejected, there's no need to have lawyers. There's nothing to do. His experience was, he says, he heard that before Mincha, he davened Mincha, he says, for the first time, I really felt bitachon. Why? Because before that, yeah, he always felt that God is going to help him. But there was always his doing part, his ishtadlus. I'm going to do and God will help me. Now he says he knew there's nothing to do. Not only that, he says he davened mincha and he knew that he's about to get freed. And he was freed next day. And no one dreamt about that. And you can't do that, that the President Trump freed him. But he links it to the fact that he came to the place in which he finally knew checkmate. Checkmate.
You're still struggling.
Yeah, well, it's okay. You're very young. It will take you a while. You're not meant to be there. And I want to say another thing importantly. This is not an idea. If this is not an experience, these ideas will do no one any good. Zero. It's going to confuse people. And it's going to leave everyone's head. That I know. So don't worry, you'll forget about it tomorrow. If you're not there, you'll forget about this. You'll remember something different.
Because it's a defense mechanism to forget it.
Because like she said, because we don't want to be a hostage. Mm-hmm. So if I don't want to be a hostage, we all have the possibility of dissociating, of escaping. The way I escape in this conversation is just to close my eyes. We all do that. People are blind to the dilemma that they face, all of us. We only allow ourselves to see dilemmas that we think we can solve, because it doesn't undo me, because I can solve it. The dilemmas that we cannot solve, we don't want to look at.
So that's the true bitachon. That's when you get to that point. That's the true.
So in other words, but this bitachon is not something that I do. It's dafke when I relinquish doing.
So can I ask about the Rebbe? Like,
sure.
Because towards the very end, when he had that whole speech about, like, we have done everything possible.
The Rebbe said,
or I have done everything I could possibly do.
I think you're saying something so nice. I thank you for that. See, for me, it was great.
And then
just
there
for this.
Was like a release.
So let me say like this, that beautiful. I never heard this, and I thank you. That when the Rebbe said on the 27th of Nisan, the Rebbe gave a talk, and the Rebbe said words that were very harsh. The Rebbe says that everything that I did was in vain. The Rebbe came to this place where up until these words, he felt like there's something that I can do. There's some, I don't know what yet, but tomorrow I'll know. The Rebbe needed to come to a place, he came. The Rebbe came to a place in which, to us, it sounded like he gave up, but now you're shedding a much deeper light. It was a necessary giving up. It was a person has to come to a place in which they say, what I did failed. There's something that I want that I can't make happen. And that's the end of man's avoida. What comes from that? If God wants a divine salvation, completely in the hands of God, which might or might not come. Which might or might not come. There's no power over it. It's not like, this is not a manipulation. If I do that, then I'm going to manipulate God to save me. And in retrospect, maybe that's what turned out, that what the Rebbe wanted did not happen in his lifetime. For us to see that even when a person comes to this place of, it's an impossible dilemma, it doesn't mean that God will step in and solve it for you the way you want. Doesn't mean it. He might not. One thing is clear, I cannot solve it. And that's the end of my avoida. Very good.
So how do we explain what people say, you know what, this is missing in my life, so I will take yet another...
So I would say that there's nothing wrong with that. I don't believe that this is the ultimate avoida. And we have to have a lot of wisdom to know when to live in what universe. I was speaking what I consider to be a very deep place. And I'm sure there are deeper places. And I don't think we're meant always to live there. So there's certainly place in our lives in which a person should have the attitude, if there's something that I'm not getting, I'll do another mitzvah. 100%. I want to go back. I said that resistance means I'm tainted. So what? So I shouldn't resist evil? Of course I should resist. I said that compromise is not the ultimate. The ultimate is the checkmate and God. But of course, compromise, when it's necessary, we have to have wisdom. I'm not saying to always compromise. Sometimes compromise is weakness. Sometimes compromise is strength. Sometimes compromise is from the Yetzer Hara. Sometimes compromise is from the Yetzer Tov. It's not so simple that. So yeah, I'm happy we're closing with that. That there is a place to compromise. There's a place to do. There's a place to add. And there is also a place in which we have to completely, completely break down. In other words, Toyu is part of the creation. It's not like an accident. In order for there to come a new, fixed world, there has to be a breakdown. What's the breakdown on Toyu? Opposition. That's in me. But why don't you resolve it? Because at some point and some level, it's irresolvable. I think we begin by putting everything outside of us, and slowly we begin bringing it in, and we start negotiating, and we start making compromises with ourselves, and it feels good until it doesn't. And then at some point, I like what you said, maybe a person has to be 90 to have this experience, to come to the place where you say, checkmate.
But so the next step from that is take that same energy that you would put into this and put it somewhere else in an area where you do have control?
Sometimes that's the avoida. Sometimes
just
it's not.
Where you have the control and where you're pushing, where you have no control.
Correct. But I'm saying in the real inner conflict, we don't have control. In the real, real inner conflict, we don't have control. We don't.
So identify where your inner conflicts are, where you have two opposing things, and just literally make a list.
And see it, and see it for what it is. And most people will have a hard time doing it because they're looking at something which they know already. This is a problem. This is the real problem. You know, a problem that you can resolve with money is not a problem. Who said that? A wealthy man said it. I know that. So like the irony, shkoyach, you have money, but he said a truth. A problem that could be resolved with money is not a real problem. A problem that could be resolved with wisdom is not a real problem. But the problem that is irresolvable, that's a problem. And some of the world that we know of is a problem. And that problem is what allows God to enter if and when God wants. That's bittul. That's the ultimate bittul. There was a chassid. It's a cute story, but it's a deep story. The Tzemach Tzedek made a farbrengen, and he had around the table big rabbanim. It was a farbrengen, four rabbis that were giving halachic decisions. And there was a big Lubavitcher Rav by the name of Rab Note. I forgot his last name. He was a very, very humble person, real humble. I don't know the meaning of the story, but this is what happened. The Tzemach Tzedek on Shavuos, on the table, he had all different types of mashke. And the Tzemach Tzedek took a cup and he asked for a little bit of each type to be poured in the cup. So you had whiskey, you had vodka, you had arak, you had this. And don't think that those mashkes to begin with were refined distilleries. As bad as alcohol is right now, and alcohol is poison, alcohol then was more poisonous. And when you start mixing alcohols, you're putting opposites. It's mamash, it's like a potion of death. He filled up a cup and he turned to one of his sons and he told him, drink. And he said, Tata, I'm afraid. He was normal. That's also a good exercise for the father to teach the son to say no to him. Right? Don't think, the father, the Rebbe, no one wanted to drink it. So the Tzemach Tzedek, so he was speaking it to people near him. It was a long table. He saw Nata. So he says, pass the cup to Nata, because Nata is Ayin. Ayin means he's nothing. I mean, he's really humble. And Ayin can tolerate opposites. Nothing can bring together opposites. So they passed the cup to Nata. He didn't hear it from the Rebbe. They told him, the Rebbe said that you are Ayin. You're nothing. He says, Nata is Taka, really Ayin. I'm really nothing. And he drank the cup. And nothing happened to him. So we don't drink the cup. We have within us all of these crazy things. And the only way we can tolerate it, the only way forward, is by becoming an Ayin. And we only become an Ayin when we realize that we can do. We have to realize that. We have to feel that at some deep level, at the right time for each person. And then to be careful not to apply this where you shouldn't. Because where you could do, you have to do. Not to cop out by saying, no, I heard a class not to do. God forbid. No. In many areas in life, we're responsible to do. But the real issue is unfixable. And that is the portal to God. That's where Hashem comes into my life. In that nothingness. In that checkmate. In that impossible. Only in the impossible comes God. For possible, you don't need God, so to say. We need God for everything. But really, the Eibishter becomes real to me when I see my opposites.